Hey, what up? This is Swamp Fiends coming at you with another episode. Today we're talking about everyone's two favorite cards in the deck, the Black Joker and the Red Joker. And to have this conversation, I invited on a fellow player who I think shares a lot of similar opinions as me in terms of those two cards. I've invited on Chanty, Maniacal Cackle, as he's known online. How are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty all right. How about yourself?
Tired. It's Friday night here, and it's Saturday lunchtime, I guess, for you over there, right?
Yeah, 1 p.m. here. I just had lunch.
So, yeah, today we're going to talk about Jokers, but GG3 just came out like a couple of days ago. So I was wondering if you've played any games with it, how you feeling about it, something like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. At first glance, I thought it would be super, super killy. But I just played Guard the Stash and had a really killy game. And then I realized there's no reason we had to play that way. We could have played Cagier. We could have played a bit of Cat and Mouse. So I think that it's going to take people a couple months to crack some of the optimal strategies on these, because there's actually quite a bit of depth to each of the strategies, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you, because I had basically the same read. Like, especially, did you play in corner or flank for Guard the Stash, or did you play the square?
We did flank Guard the Stash, and with two very mobile, very aggressive crews, so we were in each other's face on turn one.
Yeah, my initial read with those is that, you know, it is kind of like control the center, win the game with that one, but after like kind of putting it on the table a little bit, I do see some things where it's like, well, yeah, the center is the most important element, but you can definitely get people to have to chase you so that you can kind of like, I feel like you, I don't know, my read is I feel like you have to be able to threaten the center, but you can also play cagey in ways that will make that attrition go in your way. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that whoever controls the center around end of turn three, maybe turn four, is going to be in the winning position. And there's the most obvious solution for that is to play a rock solid bubble crew. But the problem they'll run into is then being able to spread out from the center and get the other points of control. And then, of course, if you're playing a crew like Lucius or Yan Lo, you can run a kidnap strategy of just say, well, if you're going to cap the center all game, I'm going to kidnap one model per turn and kill it. And then by the end game, you'll be able to dominate the center. So I think there's going to be a lot of different strategies that kind of line up in different ways. It'll be a bit rock, paper, scissors, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a similar read that, like, I feel like the matchup is... it's difficult to avoid in this GG. Like you said, it'll be a lot to take in, but like initially it does seem like there's a lot of like 8-0 pools or like those kind of like 2-4 pools too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're either going to both agree to be cagey or both agree to be aggressive. Kind of like you said, not both need to make that decision.
I think the schemes are really going to help define that, because, for instance, if you have a scheme pool where you've got some schemes you can score in the center of the board, suddenly you're talking like six of the points for the game are in the center of the board, and like then it's just you have to dominate it.
Why did Leave Your Mark have to come back? Just go back to GG1 where you belong.
Yeah, I do like it more than Claim Jump, because at least it involves some scheme markers, but
yeah. It's a little more competitive that way. But yeah, so let's talk about some Jokers, why don't we? When you think about the Joker, I guess, black or red, what do you think is the role of that card in terms of how the game plays out?
So basically, I think that the Jokers, from a game design perspective, are there to stop the game from being chess. You don't want a situation where, like, everything from at the start of the turn, you draw your hand, and if you and your opponent could look at each other's hand, the game state would be able to be determined from there. Like, you want an element of randomness in there, and this is really important for a few reasons. First off, randomness is fun. Almost every well-designed game has some really important elements of randomness, and Malifaux is actually quite very, very consistent compared to even games like Magic the Gathering or, you know, like dice-based games. Like Malifaux is very consistent. So it helps with that fun feel. I think it helps with new players because when you're able to get lucky, luck is one of the methods that new players can beat more experienced players. And I think, of course, having a good new player experience is so important for the health of a game.
Yeah, I have to respond to two things you said. The first is you said randomness is fun, and I like immediately got triggered because my favorite battle royale game was called this game Realm Royale, and then they hired this a new developer on, and that's what he said. He said randomness is fun, and then they pushed a patch that everyone universally hated and kind of like ruined the community. So yeah, randomness is fun to an extent. I don't know, just the way you said that made me laugh like immediately, and also. I immediately agree when you said to keep the game not chess. Like the thing that makes me like not want to play chess is whenever I see people play it online, there's always like measures of how close they are to playing the actual correct play. And that's always like a massive turnoff to me that there's like it's been solved. They know exactly what the correct play is and how close is the person being to playing the exact correct play. So yeah, I think you want somewhere in between, right? Where, and I think that the deck with the jokers does a great job of that because the cards themselves with the fate hand and the way they sort of play out the stats, it is very predictable. And like you said, I think the jokers is the important element to keep things spicy.
Yeah, and what I think is like chess is too far on one extreme, and like say Warhammer with the dice rolls is too luck oriented, and it can be really frustrating just like losing a whole unit to like luck like that. Whereas in Malifaux, that doesn't really happen as much. You have to have like several really bad things happen to lose a unit unexpectedly, and so I think Malifaux hits that really perfect balance where. It's pretty much all about the skill, but you have that feeling of the jokers really devastating the game. Although I do think that feeling is a bit of an illusion. I don't think it's very common for games to actually be decided by the jokers.
Yeah, and I like how you mentioned in terms of keeping like new players, keeping the game fresh for people playing against them as well, because no one wants like a blue shell in terms of like how being behind can like rubber band you ahead in certain games, but I really like the joker in that it causes me to change my plans personally. Like if I played out a matchup a bunch and I'm way more experienced than my opponent and you know I know their optimal play and my optimal play, and if I draw two severes, I don't want to be like, okay, well, you know, you might as well surrender now. It's so all of that being said, I think it's an important skill and an important thing to think about in terms of how the jokers can impact your play and how you can play around them, you know, in terms of not a tertiary skill or initial consideration, but way down the line. Like if I've played a list a bunch of times and I've fleshed it out, and I really thought about which picks I like, where my head usually goes at the end of that road is like, okay, now I want to think about jokers, because what can I do about the corner cases where I lost a game that I felt like I shouldn't have lost because of joker? And I feel like that's a fun exercise. So, I mean, the ways you can mitigate jokers, I mean, you have things like Ancient Pact, you have the Hanged, those type of things are, you know, explicitly mitigate the jokers. But I think it's fun to talk about ways you can mitigate them independent of rules. And we could talk about, and I think it's important to like not sort of speak to, you know, the most experienced of Malifaux players. And what are some ways for like newer players where they could sort of mitigate the joker starting out if it frustrates them, or like you said, it feels like it's devastating them?
Yeah, there's definitely some... like, as you say, there's some advanced tactics, but some of that basic stuff is like some players like to hold the black joker in their hand. And it really varies by crew. Like I used to do this with Gaining Ground Zero Dreamer, because he would get his deck down to like 20 cards, and you don't really want one of those to be the black joker. And then, like, say with Molly, where every card I can discard is more value for the crew, then I will never hold the Black Jokers. But so it varies by crew, but that's one of the ways that, like, once you see it, you can mitigate it. And then some models will have surprise tools for that, like 33, the new Outcast model, can dig Black Jokers out of your discard pile and help you stash them in your hand so that you don't have to deal with them as much.
Yeah, and the holding the Joker thing is, it seems to be pretty dispositional in terms of types of players. I'm a type of player who will always discard it at the beginning of the turn so that I basically, as it's always out of the deck for two turns. We'll rarely hold it another turn past the turn I draw it. Just because I feel like fishing for more cards is usually more valuable. And because I usually write lists that are a little less susceptible to black, things like that.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, I agree. Like, if you are using these advanced skills to mitigate the Black Joker, like, you usually don't need to hold it in hand as much. And a good way to think about it is think of, like, Anya 2 has the Unseen Manipulator ability. And when you're playing against Unseen Manipulator, reducing your hand size by one, it's absolutely devastating. Like, it's really, really bad for your gameplay, that ability. Like, it's really, really impactful. You can feel how impactful it is. But you're doing the exact same thing by holding a Joker in hand. You're essentially keeping your hand size down to five, which is a real problem.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that you're basically giving yourself minus one hand size, and then, you know, heaven forbid you're actually playing against Anya, then you're reducing it by two if you're sitting there holding the black the whole time. But there's also sort of just like generic strategies. So, for example, if you start your turn and you assess that there's one flip that's the most important flip, that's how you score the point this turn, you can just, you know, sort of mill cards out of your deck until you see Black Joker. Or if your opponent, the only way they avoid it is they flip red, you can try and weed actions out as much as possible to hopefully get those Jokers out of the deck before you do the important things.
One thing I want to add there is that if you're going to use that tactic, you need to make sure to have a plan B, because you might do something like, you might mill yourself down to 10 cards, you flip all your cards, you're down to your master as your last activation,
yep,
and you know that one of those 10 cards is the Black Joker, and so you end up in the space where it's like, if you'd gone earlier in the turn, you would have just gone, like, there was no Black Joker in that part of the deck and you would have been fine. And now you're pretty much guaranteed that Black Joker. So what that play really does is it opens up information for you. And if I can lean on a Lucius example, like, if I see 10 cards left in the deck with Lucius activation and one of those cards is a Black Joker, I'm going to be looking at that and saying, well, obviously I'm not going for the kill, I'm going for setting up the kill next turn. So what's the line I can do that sets up the kill for next turn, now that I know that I'm going to lose one of my AP to a Black Joker?
Yeah, and another good example is Jedza 2, who usually need to pass two TNs and then will be spending life tokens as soon as she makes contact. And then if she flips black on damage, not only is that, you know, you might have cheated a card for the first TN, cheated a card for the second TN, cheated a card to hit with the attack, and then you spent two tokens that are effectively two AP to get those tokens. You basically, you know, you've dropped a ton of resources on something if you, you probably should have just avoided it, right? If you knew 10 cards are left and one of them's black. So can you think of any other ways that are kind of generic, that are independent of the crew you're running, to either play to the red or play around black?
Yeah, definitely. So if we're talking gameplay, one of the really big things, well, first off, like, you always want to be thinking about if you could flip the black or if your opponent flips the red. And so I'll walk through a little story of a sequence I experienced recently in a game. I think yesterday it was. Basically, I was Lucius 2 versus Molly 2, and she had an Archie. And I calculated very early on in my gameplay that Lucius could teleport over to Archie. He has Ruthless. He could just damage Archie end of turn 1, and then start of turn 2, win initiative, hit him 3 times. Boom, he's dead. Guaranteed kill. I even had a handful of severes after shaping my hand turn one, so it was pretty much guaranteed. The problem was, of course, I was thinking about jokers. I was thinking, well, what happens if I black, or what happens if my opponent reds? Because one of my thoughts was, oh, I could put Ancient Pact on Lucius, but that didn't solve the problem of my opponent flipping a red. The Ancient Pact only stops Lucius from flipping a black. So I didn't bother putting Ancient Pact on Lucius. And what I did is I used Hinamatsu and Mature Nephilim to move Lucius twice, which basically saved me one secret passage. So already I've given myself an extra AP of wiggle room. I'm more likely to kill him. But I'm still thinking, oh, what if things don't go to plan? So then I had my Mature Nephilim move into position to be right near where Archie was going to end up. Then I activated Lucius, and I tried the secret passage. Bam! I hit that black joker, and I was like, well, that's really annoying. My master hit a black joker, but luckily I had a plan for this. So then I just spend my second AP. Okay, second AP, I'm going to secret passage over there and land near Archie. Then I use down the wrong path. Now at this point, I know that there's no black joker, so I can go a little bit more aggressive. Still the chance of a red, but I still think, okay, I'm going to go for it. I win the duel, Archie down the wrong path. I then go chunk him for... I had the option of only using one of my severes here, but again, I'm thinking ahead. I want Archie as low as possible so that next turn I can kill him easily. Even if I lose an AP to a Joker, I can kill him easily. So I'm going to go hard this turn. So I decided to cheat for the coordinated attack trigger. And then I did 2 damage with Lucius, and I did 3 damage with the Mature Nephilim. And this was huge because my first plan had no plans to have the Mature Nephilim on this side of the board. But I was thinking about Jokers, and I was saying, I need some redundancy in my game plan in case something goes wrong. So that Nephilim there gave me an extra 3 free damage. So that's turn 1, and then I'll go over turn 2. On turn 2, I, of course, win initiative because I'm never born. I have double Ancient Pact. And so I'm looking, I can kill Archie. And I think, well, I'll activate the Mature Neph. At this point, I had Archie down to like 5 or 6 life. And I think Mature Nephilim can kill Archie. He has Ancient Pact. He can't Black Joker. It's guaranteed kill. But then I was thinking, but my opponent could red Joker. And this is, there's 2 attacks. There's 20 or like 50 cards left in the deck. The odds of that happening are roughly 1 in 25. It's very unlikely. But at the same time, that's a bit more than I'm comfortable with. A 4% chance, that's starting to be like, you know, if you let yourself have 4% chance can mess you up and you do that 10 times, suddenly you're probably going to get messed up eventually. So I wanted to play this as careful as possible. So I said, okay, Mature Nephilim with Ancient Pact to ignore Black Joker isn't good enough. I'm going to activate Lucius, because what Lucius could do is, well, he has 3 AP. So no matter how many Jokers were happening here, I only need 1 AP to kill Archie. Because of the coordinated attack trick that I had set up the previous turn. And so even if I got my Black Joker and he got his Red Joker, I was still going to kill this damn Archie. And I had the cards in hand that I knew I could guarantee it. And it meant that my master activated earlier. I didn't have, you know, the full power of my master doing other tricks. But it meant that I had that 100%, nothing can go wrong with my plan because I've built in that redundancy.
Yeah, and you said, you know, I want to be extra careful, but I think the opposite of that is if you're not playing around the Joker as you described there, you're kind of playing greedy. So in this case, I think to your point, yeah, thinking about the Jokers is a way to not play greedy and not to lean on the guaranteed, you know, quote at the beginning, you're like guarantee kill. But then when you think about it, another layer deeper, it's like, oh, well, it actually isn't guaranteed. And that's kind of the point of the Jokers that we mentioned in the beginning. It allowed you to go down that decision tree, which I'm sure was actually pretty rewarding at the end of the day.
Yeah, and another really important thing you mentioned there is that the getting greedy, because here's where my plan could have gone wrong. What I did with Archie is I did sculpt my hand turn 1, but I ended up using enough cards to get into position and to smack him down. I only saved 2 severes for the next turn. And it was within the realm of possibility that I drew, like, say, 4 aces or, you know, 4 weaks or whatever, 4 bad cards. It was within the realm of possibility that I draw those 4 bad cards, and that I didn't have a severe for initiative, a severe for landing the attack, and the severe for coordinated attack. So it was actually within the realm of possibility at the end of turn one that I wouldn't draw the cards I needed to execute my game plan. So at the start of turn two, I did a quick little assessment, like, can I stay on my game plan? Have I drawn enough gas? And this is where you'll see people overextend themselves, where they won't stop to think, like, I had this game plan. I need to stop and check, is my hand good enough to force this game plan? Because they often think, like, oh, all I need to do is land a stat 6 versus stat 4. But, like, it's not that unlikely that I flip a 7 and my opponent flips a 10, right? Like, I need to be able to have the card to force that.
Yeah, and I think overextend was the key word in that statement, because that's what you're really doing here when you're playing around the Jokers, is you're using the information that you have to play the safest play if you know it's if you know it's risky. You know, you don't want to put yourself out there and then eat a Joker and then be just completely left out in the wind.
Yeah, and so my game plan in this case, if I went into turn two and I didn't think I could get the kill, if I won initiative naturally, I would have just gone for it and seen if I could flip it, because, you know, sometimes you got to give yourself the chance to win. But I wasn't going to work super hard of, like, cheating a 13 for initiative and then only to have my plans fall over, which is a mistake I've made a lot. I've cheated a 13 for initiative and then not had the cards to force the game plan. So that was a harsh lesson.
Yeah, I almost every time I've cheated a severe for initiative, I always felt like it was a waste. It can be rough if you don't have the exact math and all the variables that you need. And considering the Jokers exist, you rarely have all the variables you need. So I think those are some general, you know, rules of thumb, you know, like lessons you can take when playing with any list, always playing around that information. But what I think is really fun to think about is list building and thinking about rules that explicitly, well, not explicitly ignore Jokers, but sort of in a roundabout way, either play stronger into Red Joker or can help you mitigate the Black Joker. So when thinking about that, I mean, the two questions I usually ask myself after I've been playing a list for a while is, you know, how many actions in my list, if I black, will sort of ruin my turn, or how many actions in my list that if I red will waste the spike, or how many actions if I red will really lean into my spike. If you listen to the episode I did about Parker with Third Floor Wars, pretty much my entire list was built to play into Jokers. I only had one action in that list that if I redded it, it was a waste. And if I blacked any, you know, it's just a bunch of attacks. And if I blacked any of them, who cares? They're all min two anyway. But if I red any damage, you know, it's a huge spike. And I think thinking about lists in that way can be a fun little exercise after, you know, thinking about after you get the scaffolding built of the list that you're playing, thinking about how the Jokers can mess with it or improve it is a fun thing to do. Does that track with your experience, Cackle?
Yeah, that's I definitely agree, and it's honestly an area that I've been trying to improve on, because I think you mentioned something about, like, if you make a high volume of attacks, like, you know, if you're making 10 min 2 attacks, you're not fussed if they fail, and if they succeed, great, and then if they Joker, Black Joker, who cares? Red Joker, fantastic. And that's one of the things that I really had to work on in my gameplay, is just make extra attack flips when you can do so. Like, of course, you don't want to go out of your way and make yourself vulnerable so your opponent's making extra attack flips, but anywhere where you can be taking pot shots, like, people make fun of the stat 5 gun, but honestly, if you get 2 free shots at your opponent with a stat 5 gun with no answer, like, that's great. Sure, they can cheat to stop you, but, like, you're draining cards from their hand, potentially. Sometimes you're just randomly hitting. Sometimes you're hitting hard enough that you're getting those straight flips. I think there's a lot to be said for a high volume of attacks.
Yeah, and, I mean, what do you think is the most common damage track in the game? Or not in terms of, like, the math, you know, because we could look that up online, but in terms of the models that people are actually bringing, what do you think is the most common damage track?
I think competitively, the two damage tracks you're thinking the most about, although we should give a special mention to another one, is so the ones you're thinking about the most about are the min three. So that like if they land the hit, it's mm-hmm. doing a big chunk of damage. They're hitting really, really hard. And the 2-4-5 damage track, because the 2-4-5 damage track, like often you can mitigate it, like you can stun it to zero, or armor one can block that too, or even if you just take two damage, like that's all right. You don't want to take a bunch of two damage pings, but you can take two damage. But that moderate four is so, so huge. And actually flipping moderate damage is more likely even on a neg than people often think. But if you can get to that straight flip with a 2-4-5 damage track. So those are the two big ones that people think about competitively. But the other important one, which we've kind of already touched on, is the little shitters, the like the 1-2-3s, the 2-3-4s. Cause like I've had a corpse candle force me to cheat a severe. I think earlier today I cheated a severe against a corpse candle. Because they took an attack and they were going to kill an important model because they happened to flip high. So like those. So I think those three categories of damage flips are really important.
Yeah, I think 2-4-5 and like 3-4-5 are probably the most common. You know, there's some maybe 3-4-6 is in the conversation as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, the difference between the way 2-4-5 and 3-4-5 interact with Jokers is pretty huge, you know, because the 2-4-5 comes at a cheaper cost than the 3-4-5. Usually you can get more of those attacks. They're often at range. That's like a very common gun stat line. So you can usually get more of those attacks out, which means if you hit red on both of them for damage, you're doing the same damage. But one of them, you have more chances to get to that red versus the other. And also, if you hit black, you're doing less expected. It has less damage to your expected outcome for the 2-4-5 damage track.
I think that's a really important point, that min 2 damage tracks, when they black Joker, you've not lost a lot. But when you hit that red Joker, you've lost 2 damage on a black, and you've gained often like 4 damage on a red.
Yeah, and that's an important point, thinking about like the corpse candles and stuff. I feel like there's a school of thought where if I don't have the cards, instead of taking the attack, I should focus. Or there's a school of thought where if I have the attack, I should take the attack. Do you fall on either side of that spectrum?
So for me personally, I fall to a fault on the side of. Of not going for it unless I'm fairly confident I can guarantee some results. I play a very cagey hit and run play style, and so I'm usually looking for like, I'm going to go in if I'm pretty sure I'm going to be landing some hits, and then by contrast, I won't send my model in so my opponent doesn't get to make attacks against me, because the types of models I play tend to be quite vulnerable to volume of attack, so I try not to allow my opponent the volume of attack play style. Whereas, like, say, Personal Glitch is one of those members of the community that I learned a lot from. Of his playstyle is the opposite end of the spectrum, where he will just shove his crew into your face and flip as many cards as possible, thinking like, "Well, you can't pass all the duels I'm throwing at you."
Yeah, I think I'm probably on that spectrum a little more. Also, to a fault, I can't tell you. You know, I played a ton of Parker games and in various mental states, and I can tell you how many times I've been like, "Wait, why did I not just focus and then shoot?" It's like, no, I have to fish for min four every attack. So yeah, I could definitely play the other way to a fault, but I feel like the two school of thoughts make you stronger and weaker in different situations. So if you're typically, and this is, I guess, independent of the risk you're taking by making the attack, because obviously, like, if a model is a walk charge away and you don't have cards in hand, but once you get there, they can hit you back. It's just always better just to walk and focus. Well, for the most part, unless you're got to play a little shovel or whatever. But let's say there's no, you're not walking into any threats by taking the attack or focusing for the next turn. I think if you're focusing, you're generally playing around the hand more. Basically saying that if I draw some fat severes next turn, I'm going to be able to guarantee something. And if you're just taking the attack, I think you're playing into the Jokers more, where, you know, you could spike. You never know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you hit the key point there, which is retaliatory attacks are a big consideration. So if you're able to take more attacks against your opponent from a certain line, it can often be a good idea because you're giving yourself more chances at spiking them than they are getting at spiking you. But if you're going to like rush in your model block charge and you get one attack and then they get to retaliate with two attacks, then of course, yeah, that's a terrible line.
Yeah. That also brings up a good point to thinking about defensive tech and which ones get screwed by their opponent flipping red the most. I think the poster child of this is hard to wound, and I'm sure you got gripes about hard to wound as a Rezzer player and how often red gets hit because of that, your defensive tech, right?
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. I don't actually have any gripes about it because it's just part of the game, and I accept it that hard to wound by its very nature means you get hit by more jokers. And it's funny because you see in other factions that other factions will complain about their horsemen, their riders, getting hit by red jokers. And I'm just kind of like, of course my dead rider gets hit by red jokers. He has hard to wound. That's how that mechanic works.
Come on. When they hit hard to wound on the fourth car, you're not like, of course.
I definitely have my games where I get salty, especially if it's like, I think in the World Series Championship, I was starting to get a bit burnt out last year, and I did have some salt of those things. But when I look back on it, I'm like, of course. And I can give an example, actually, of where, like, yeah, there was please. This one game I lost in a tournament in person last year. And basically, Molly stepped out into the open. My opponent shot her with a terrible chance to do much damage, but then he accidentally flipped the red joker and, you know, she has hard to wound. She helps make that happen. And like, I could either take that moment and say like, oh, you're so lucky, and try to, you know, take that win away from my opponent and say, oh, you didn't deserve that win. That's pure luck. Or I could be honest with myself and say like, well, the fact that I walked into the open and allowed him to take that shot is what allowed him to kill my Molly. And he had assassinate, so like it actually won him the game. If I had literally just had Molly not spend any AP, not leave behind the wall, I would have won that game.
Yeah, I had a similar situation at the last tournament I went to. I blacked a terrifying to score my last point to tie. And I was like, oh my gosh, of course it was black. You know, of course it had to happen there. And then I turned to come to find out my opponent had red in his hand anyway. So I'm like, oh, well.
And I think that's one of the big things is it is so easy to focus on the event when the Joker happens without thinking about all the events where the Joker didn't happen. But if you spend a turn where you're flipping 20, 30, 40 cards, of course there's going to be a Joker in there. And if you play a playstyle where all your flips are important, of course the Jokers are going to happen on important flips.
Yeah. So that brings up an important point. So can you describe a play style that, what did you just say, that where all of your flips are important? Like, so maybe independent or list, or maybe you have a perfect like example of a keyword that does this where all of their flips are important. So they're just really susceptible to jokers.
Yeah, I can give an example on each end. So my play style is that fairly cagey control style where I'm trying to play a game where I only make important flips. And so like I'll have Monos, Archie, Dead Rider, for instance, with a Molly crew. They are all super heavy hitters. I want, when I go in with them, they're fairly vulnerable to counterattacks and dying. So if I go in with them, I want to know that I land my attacks. And then if I Joker, it is very painful. However, what's okay about that is that I deal with that with redundancy and list building. And so I'm saying like, okay, well, I'm going to have Archie, I'm going to have Dead Rider, I'm going to have Monos. That's three, like min three, three AP beaters. So even if my plans go wrong with one of them, I have another model that can step in and fill in that role. And I'll contrast that a bit to say when I'm playing Sheamus. Sheamus is a classic example of like, and you just got to accept this is part of his design. The crew funnels super hard power into Sheamus. And if his activation goes awry, that's kind of bad for you. But even then, the trick with Sheamus is that you get five activations with him over the course of the game. You should expect that one or two of them go awry. And if you can get two or three game-breaking activations with him, that's enough to win the game. So he doesn't have redundancy in list building, but he has redundancy in opportunities, at least. If he black jokers, he can say, okay, well, I'm going to secret passage and run away. And if his last AP should never be a blind secret passage if he's not willing to accept that black joker, in my view. Like, that's a playstyle thing. To go
Before that, I'd like to expand what you mean by redundancy in list building. So when you say that, you mean like, if I need something to do beating, I'm going to have 2-3 beaters. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so like, and especially since like Molly is a support master, she's going to have a whole bunch of beaters. And so that redundancy is valuable for all sorts of reasons, but since we're talking about jokers today and cards, what that allows you to do is that if the cards aren't lining up for one of your models, that model can run away and a different model can cycle in. So like if somebody comes in, attacks Archie, and I'm like, haha, you're min two, what are you going to do? And then they red joker me and I take 6 or 7 damage. Then I'm going to say, well, fuck, Archie is running away. He is no longer on fighting because he's too injured. I'm going to swap in Dead Rider. Dead Rider was on scheme running. Now Dead Rider is on combat. And that sort of redundancy of roles and like not worrying too much. And like Malifaux, bad things happen. You need to be prepared for losing a key piece.
So basically you mean like if you have, I guess a good example would be like if you're playing Symbols of Authority, you don't have just one scheme runner who could get red jokered and die. You're always going to have a backup for the same role. Like say you're taking Spread Them Out. You don't have just one scheme runner on each flank. You have a scheme runner and then a beater who can go flex and take that guy's role on both sides. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. And I had a perfect example of this yesterday in that game I was talking earlier about where I killed Archie. The reason I put so much effort into killing Archie is I analyzed my opponent's list, and Archie was his only hypermobile model that the Krulligan could teleport to. And so I thought, if I kill Archie, I'm taking out his single Krulligan, and then he has a Night Terror on the other side of the board, and if I can kill that Night Terror, he's done. He has no scoring power. And so that's his list lacked that redundancy that allowed me to go, right, all I have to do is kill these two models and he can't score anymore. So when I build a list with Molly, I'll do something like Archie, Monos, Dead Rider. All three of those models can swap between scheming or beats. And that's what makes Molly so powerful, in my view, is that she's really good at supporting a bunch of models that are really good at combat and at scheming. So at any point in the game, I'm covering every role that I need to, and models are swapping between those roles whenever they need. And of course, you don't always do that. Say with, who's a good example of, like, say Sheamus, he's pretty straightforward as well. Hoffman Peacekeeper. Peacekeeper is a good example of that model's primary role is always killing. Like, it's always combat. Like, it's a slow, chunky model. You're not hiring it for multi-purpose. But that's okay, because he has other ways of building in redundancy.
Yeah, and as you're saying that, I'm thinking a lot about schemes. And how redundancy in list building to avoid the jokers, sort of ruining you. It sounds like you and I probably agree on not taking schemes that will basically get jokered out of viability. Like Vendetta is one of my least favorite schemes to take ever because it feels like it's so susceptible to jokers. Do you feel similarly?
Yeah, definitely to an extent. And the same thing comes up with Soulstones. You'll often see people take Vendetta against a Soulstone user and then hit them for 2 damage and then just pray that stone doesn't reduce the damage to 0. So that can be really awkward. So you're just hoping the cards go your way. And then, as you say, jokers are another consideration. So generally, I'm taking a Vendetta model. I want to be able to at least make 2 attacks and have a target that I know cannot reduce the damage to 0. And if I can meet those criteria, as well as the model that survives, then I'm more likely to take Vendetta. But I agree that it's one of those schemes where it's very easy for the plan to go wrong. And when you go for the kill with Vendetta, like, you need to score that, because that's probably your one and only window before they kill your Vendetta model in return.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting point. I mean, do you feel like some schemes are more susceptible to jokers than the others outside of?
Yeah, definitely. Like, Assassinate, like I always say, like, Like, if Assassinate is in the pool, you need to keep your master safe to the point that a Joker cannot kill them, because you need to be prepared for your opponent to score it. And then on the flip side, when you go for the kill on their leader, you need to be confident that the Black Joker isn't going to ruin your day. Here's the big one, of course. Black Joker on Leap is so big. And this comes up on Symbols of Authority all the time, or Spread Them Out, or whatever. Like, people will plan their whole turn around a single model going and scoring a Symbol of Authority, and then they will Black Joker the Leap and then be like, oh, I can't score this turn. And that's because they don't have redundancy in gameplay. They don't have two models threatening to score. As well as, like, the other issue with redundancy there is, what if your one model gets disrupted, or what if it's killed by a red Joker? I think all of those scheme runners, where if you're allowing yourself to rely on one model to score your scheme, so whether that's Vendetta or whether you only took a single Necropunk for Spread Them Out, you're potentially in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, most of us, normal non-green gamers don't have OP by your side models that can go wherever they want. You can build you can get three Krooligans for the cost of that one schemer.
Yeah, and that's one of the wild things about by your side. And in fact, the Molly crew in general is, between her insane amount of card draw and redundancy, I have found her to be one of the most consistent crews that I've ever played. Except that Archie nerf to remove the mask on his leap, the crew's a tiny bit inconsistent now, and you can really feel it. Building lists like that with consistency in mind will make a really, really big difference.
So one thing I want to go back to is we talked about hard to wound making you susceptible to, like, red, but in terms of preventing your models from dying to red or hitting black and dying, I think there's some tech that, you know, is just kind of designed to prevent you from losing to Jokers. Off top, I think of hard to kill kind of versus hard to wound, because, I mean, hard to kill is kind of designed so you don't get red jokered in one shot, versus hard to wound, which will make you better into volume of attack usually, but can make you susceptible to that red joker damage. Are there other sort of defensive techs you think about when writing lists that sort of can prevent you from, like, in the example, like, we're talking about Vendetta, right? So that's a situation where you can't build redundancy. So you kind of have to go to list writing if you want to score Vendetta. What are some things you are drawn to try and prevent yourself from getting jokered?
I think there's two tools. There are things that allow you to just guarantee that you can't be hit in the first place. Because, for instance, Bete Noire is a really, really good example of that, because if she spends the game buried, like, they just can't, they don't even get a chance to kill her, it's guaranteed. But then also, she's another interesting example of, you can't kill her in one hit. And so being really conscious, not only when you build your list, but throughout the game, of, like, what does your opponent need to achieve to kill your model in one, two, or three hits. And it is an example today. I was playing the Scribe with Lucius 2 earlier, and I looked at my opponent's Bete Noire, and I said, okay, Bete Noire needs to do 6 damage to my Scribe to one-shot it through its defensive trigger. In order to do that, she needs to be able to land a critical strike to get up to +1 damage, and then she needs a straight flip, and then she needs a red joker on the damage. So she just needed a red joker on the damage and a crit strike. And I was like, I know the risk, I understand the risk, and I am going to accept the risk. So I decided to send my scribe in, went and disrupted his crew, and then Bete Noire charged it, got the crit strike off the top of the deck, cheated the red joker for damage, bam, my scribe was dead. And I think reviewing that line, I played correctly, where I correctly assessed the risk of, like, okay, I am willing to accept that there's quite a small chance that he can kill me here, and I understand what that chance is, and I'm just going to accept it if it happens. And I think not being too afraid of those minute outcomes, but being aware of them. Whereas at other points in the game, I was like, oh, if I Lucius, I leave my master here, and he jokers my master, he's dead, and then I lose the game. those were the sorts of situations where I'm not willing to accept a risk of a Joker on my massacre. I'm activating and I'm teleporting away.
Yeah, and it also depends on where you are in the game, like in terms of attrition, right? Like you have to take those small risks if you're behind, you know? And you also have to play into the spikes that you can get from the red Joker if you're behind. Taking more attacks, hoping for those reds on damage. So it's important to add that to the math, but I don't think the Jokers really create any sort of math situation. I think they're always just about different plans. In terms of like you're not usually the Jokers don't really go into the math, but they do go into how you should plan in terms of safety, like you're saying.
Yeah, and one thing I meant to mention before also that the amount of wounds on your model is really important to consider, because that's what affects how many hits to kill. So like with Archie, for instance, I'm like, okay, he can die in 4 min 3 hits, or he can die in like a hit of 7 and a lucky moderate of 4. So like he's potentially dying in 2 hits, and so I need to be conscious of that when I decide to commit him. Because there's a very real possibility that he just dies in 2 hits. And then rather than worry too, like, if that happens, another good trick is then to turn around and try to kill one of your opponent's models, so you're at least at equity and being like, okay, I've been put behind by this. I can either tilt about it, or I can ask myself, okay, how do I get back in the game?
Yeah, and to go back to your position about redundancy, I mean, if Archie's in a position where he can die to 2 hits, he better not have been your Vendetta model, right? otherwise, you messed up a turn ago.
Yeah, and that scoring redundancy, which you mentioned earlier for schemes, is another important thing to consider for that, is if a Krulligan is my catch-and-release model, I need to be really, really thoughtful with what risks I expose Archie to, because Archie is potentially the main mechanism for how I score that. And in fact, sometimes in list building, I will hire Philip and the Nanny, which people are like, oh, Philip and the Nanny is terrible, and I say, no, Philip and the Nanny is giving me redundancy for my Krulligan teleport, which is something that very few other models offer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now everyone knows you got catch and release when they see Philip and the Nanny, huh?
I think if people see Krulligan in a scheme pool, they should expect that it's catch and release and that they can't stop the first point.
Yeah. So I'd like to think about some of the lists that are most susceptible to Jokers. And I have an example that maybe you can relate to. I played a ton of Terra in GG0 and GG1. And the reason I kind of stopped playing her is because I kind of reached the end of that road where you've tried a bunch of different tech and, you know, you got all of your pieces, you know, you got your ducks in a row. You're feeling strong with the list, but thinking about the Jokers kind of just would make her feel like not a reliable choice if I'm trying to win a 5-round tournament. Because like you mentioned before with Sheamus, right? Like over the span of a game, you should expect a Joker to not ruin, but at least super dull one of his activations. And with Terra, I felt that over the course of a 5-round event, I'm going to black a summon that was very important. Or I'm not going to draw, you know, that list, at least the way I was playing it back then, would require like 7 TNs. You know, there are only 5, but I got to hit 7 of them. And then, you know, I got to hit a duel that does nothing but set up the next duel. All of that stuff is sort of susceptible to a Joker sort of ruining it over the course of a 5-round event. So I'm wondering if you have a similar experience where you feel good about a list until you start to really think about how the Jokers impact how it plays.
For me, I think the Jokers are unlikely enough that I'm kind of willing to risk it and maybe it'll be okay. But where it really hits home, and in fact why I don't play Sheamus, is as you say, those TNs. It's because say you're taking those 5, 6, 7 TNs, even if you black Joker one, sure, you can be clever, you can find ways to play around it. But where it really hits home for me is when like my hand ends up being like, okay, I have a 9, a 5, and like 2 2s and 2 1s or whatever. Like when you hit that hand where you just cannot force through any of that stuff that you want. And I think that's kind of why Seamus gets balanced out competitively, is if he got to have his best turn, if he got to have his best game every game, I think he would be unbeatable. But the cards are what prevent him from doing that, which is like, I kind of struggle with that design. I don't really enjoy that play style as much. And I think Tara is in the same boat because she has a ton of TNs. Although I know some players that can use the time warp to swap the decks and memorize the order of the deck. I can't count cards like that. I can't do that. But I know some people who hit every single TN with Tara because of those damn deck swapping abilities.
That's a good way to not finish a tournament game.
Yeah, well, like I know a I know some people who can't finish tournament games because they tried to do it. And I know two people who can do it successfully in tournament time.
When I do it, I just remember like two important flips that I really need. I know they're after, you know, these two cards or something like that. And not mess with either writing the whole deck down or trying to remember the whole deck.
A really interesting example is Dreamer, because Dreamer players have the option of putting Ancient Pact on Dreamer to make his summons guaranteed. Semi-guaranteed. They ignore the Black Joker. And what's funny about that is I don't like doing that because I have a mentality of I kind of just live with the Jokers as they happen, and because I have so many other things going on my list. And I kind of figure that even if I can't black my own summon, I might unbury it, and then it gets one shot by a red Joker anyway. So like, you can't completely insulate yourself against that. But I do think this card luck, those crews that like really funny, those crews who have like one incredible plan A and don't have any, their plan B is so far behind, are very vulnerable to the cards, including the Jokers. And personally, I don't enjoy playing them as much.
Yeah, I think the play style that I think is very susceptible is what I call like build a beater list, where they have one massive threat and they do things like stack focus on it, push it 5 times so it can go wherever the hell it wants, you know, and pour all their resources into like 1 or 2 models so that it can deliver really focused attacks. I feel like that is a good way to, it's a good way to win like 3 games out of the 5-round event pretty easily, but you should expect a Joker to really ruin that over the course of a 5-round event in a way that makes me not like that play style. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about too, where most of these type of lists, they're also putting that model in a really vulnerable position, assuming that the threat was going to be dead. And those kind of lists can get ruined by Jokers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jokers, and again, any forms of bad flips. And I think people like those lists because on a good day when you're flipping hot, like they feel unbeatable, but they also flip poorly, and even like people can have game plans for the flipping well. And I think Hoffman is a really good example of that. He doesn't have access to much card draw. He's kind of at the mercy of a good deck, and I'd advise players for being against those kinds of crews as try to pressure their hands so that they aren't able to force through events. And then of course, sometimes the Joker will save you as well. Of course, you should never rely on the Joker. You should be thinking about how the Jokers will mess up your plans rather than how they will save your plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Karai is another example where if Karai draws like 4 severes, she feels like the strongest master on the planet. And then if she has a lukewarm hand or hits a few Jokers, you're like, that's it? Why is my stuff not dead? I feel like that's a pretty common list archetype. What are some list archetypes you could think of that play really well into Jokers?
Yeah, I think any of those archetypes with like focused on multiple strong beaters with a support crew behind them. There's pretty good redundancy no matter what happens like, you'll still have some beaters left, you'll still have some support crew left. So I think those are the sorts of ones, the ones that have multiple copies of every role you need to do, even if those are overlapping. Like, again, you might, Monos is both a beater and a scheme runner, but you really need to be able to make sure that every role has multiple models that can do it. And not just in your list, but at all points in the game, you have multiple paths to what you want to accomplish. So if what you want to do this turn is pick up a symbol of authority, you need to have multiple paths to get there. If what you want to do this turn is delete the enemy master or the enemy Archie, as I did yesterday, you need to have that multiple plans of how you're going to get there.
You know what list you would like? I've been messing around with Zoraida too, and the only like non-beater is Spawn Mother, whose whole job is just to lay some eggs and then die, so the eggs hatch into gups for potential score points on turn five. But then the whole rest of the list is just beaters that can also flex to schemers. So like it plays a lot like Molly. You should give it a shot when you get a chance. It's super redundant in that way.
That's awesome. Definitely send me the list, because I love the idea of Zoraida too. And if there's a good list like that, I am fully on board.
So before we take off, is there any last minute advice to keep people from tilting off the planet you can provide?
Well, I think the single biggest thing about Jokers is to take what I might call like a learning oriented attitude. And because basically after every game, you should really be looking at, like, what could I have done differently to make that outcome of the game differently? What could I have done differently to play better? How do I become a better player in the next game than I was in the last game? And complaining about Jokers doesn't really do that. Thinking about Jokers in the way that we've done today can be constructive. That can help you strategize about Jokers. But when you're just, like, tilting about Jokers, that's not helpful. That's not helping improve your future gameplay. So you want to stay really focused on every single game, learning what you can do better the next time. And for that, like, often flipping Jokers is outside your control other than what we've discussed here. So I find that often it's best to focus on, oh, I could have made these different decisions. I could have cleaned up this about my play. So rather than focusing on the luck element, you should focus on the skill element, which is what you have control over. And then the other big thing to consider with all of this is that you don't want to be rude to your opponent. You really don't want to be shouting that your opponent only won because they're really lucky, that you don't want to be like insulting their skill levels or anything. Like, I feel it kind of takes away from your opponent's victory if you're just salting about Jokers, and I don't think it's very sporting.
Yeah, I think that's good advice to go out on. Do you have any last minute bits you want to add before we take off?
No, just thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. It was a good convo.
What are you doing in my swamp?